You're listening to Bands and Botanicals, a unique podcast where trainer and trainee discuss fitness, herbalism, and healthy habits for life. We're your hosts. I'm Paula Kirsch, owner of Botanically Curious and artisan herbalist.
And my name is Danielle Kreese, certified personal trainer and owner of DC Fit. Now, before we get started, if you could do us a brief favor and go to Apple Podcasts and just leave us a review, we'd love to hear from you. And with that being said, let's start the show. Of season one of Bands and Botanicals. Yeah. We did it.
Yes.
So some of you may not know, and I guess this is pertinent to say because we're having a little bit of a personal episode, mm-hmm. but the whole reason this started was because of a dream that Paula had.
Mm-hmm. I had a dream. It was kind of strange. I have really super realistic dreams, which is not one of the things I was going to plan on talking about today, but...
It can be fun. We're giving fun facts about ourselves, so...
Fun facts.
You get to know us a little bit better.
Yeah, and it was just, like, one of those where you wake up and you're just like, oh my god, that had to have happened. Like, that felt so real, and so I shared it with Danielle, and we tried it out, and, yeah, we're here, like, months later.
40 episodes later, yeah. I'd say almost a year. Just shy of a year. A few months shy, mostly just because... things are getting a little busy.
Right.
Just taking a little hiatus so we could see family and kind of get away for a second and then hopefully regroup.
Right.
So you said that you have a lot of realistic dreams, so why don't we just jump off of that? You said you weren't planning on talking about it, but does that happen to you often where like your dreams kind of end up manifesting into something or kind of like showing you something? Like are you...
Sometimes I'll get deja vu. So for our listeners out there, today is not super informative unless you want to get to know us. So these are all personal things.
It's us informative.
But I'll have a dream and then like 2 years later, I'll kind of get deja vu and I'll be like, oh my god, I dreamt about this. And sometimes I pan out and then sometimes I'm worried because I have dreams that end up happening and then some of my other dreams are super realistic and horrifying. I don't know if there's anybody out there that feels like they dream about like a past life or maybe it's like astral projection where it's like you must have a secondary life somewhere else. But yeah, my dreams definitely feel like that where they're super realistic.
Damn. I mean, I'm trying to look for a past life regression therapist. So if I find one, I'll let you know. Maybe you can see if any of those dreams were from your past.
That would be pretty cool.
Yeah, because I feel like I came into this world with some stuff that I don't know where it came from.
Right.
And I would love to figure that out. Yeah, so that's really cool. I don't remember any dreams ever.
Oh, interesting.
I seem to always remember the dreams where, like, Jeff is doing something to upset me. And then I wake up and I'm all like salty and he like tries to give me a kiss. I'm like, you did this in my dream. He's like, that wasn't real. I was like, it was to me. But no, I have a really hard time remembering dreams. And I don't know why. That's why. But I guess, I don't know. That technically wasn't the start. That was just a little background on how we even got started on this. She literally came into a training session, said, I had a dream that we did this together. And I said, I think I'm in a space where I'm trying to say yes to things that make me uncomfortable, so let's do it. And here we are. So Paula, what is a fun fact that people wouldn't know? Maybe I don't even know.
So my first one is that for those who don't know, I grew up in Dover, New Jersey, like an hour outside of New York City. And I grew up in a haunted house.
You're going to have to expand on that.
In Mine Hill, New Jersey, which is, I was kind of on the border of like Dover, Mine Hill, and Warden. And for doesn't mean anything to anybody. But anyway, so it was this cute little, you know, quiet town for the most part. And we had a nice three-story house, and a lot of houses on the East Coast have finished basements and everything. And so there was often times where I was, you know, it was like the third floor up where all the bedrooms were, and I would get woken up in the middle of the night and kind of like, almost like an out-of-body experience, like I couldn't control my body, I don't know what you would call it, but I would be carried, like something would you know, make my body move down the stairs to the basement, and like then I couldn't move, and I'm just standing there in the dark. And yeah, and so that often happened.
And then you just wake up in the basement?
No, like I was awake the whole time.
Oh, and, but just felt like something right. was kind of like
yeah, and then
driving you down.
Some of the time, yeah, I would end up waking up like in the kitchen somehow or other things like that. I think after a while, I like would grab a blanket because I knew what was going on. If you've ever gotten that feeling of like I shouldn't go to this place, or like maybe you're outside in the woods or something else, and you're just like. There's just a reason why I feel like I shouldn't go that. It's like that survival feeling. Mm-hmm. So I would get that often in certain places. You'd have to see the property. It was crazy because it would have this big giant deck on the back side mm-hmm. of it. And so there was a huge underside to the deck because there's obviously a basement that was, you know, never kept or anything. But, no, you know, there was no way to really see what was under there. So it was just, yeah, nuts.
If we could be video recording, you'd see all my facial yeah. expressions right now. Like, my eyes get so big, and I'm like, I was telling Paula earlier that I love hate this stuff. I love it so much, but then I get scared, and I'm like, oh, shit, now I'm scared. Mm-hmm. But I love talking about this stuff. I definitely didn't live in a haunted house, but I have had, I feel like, experiences. Mm. Unexplainable experiences, but that's interesting, because it... Mine never felt, like, malicious. And I wonder, like, since, you know, if it was indentured servitude and stuff of some sort, was, I guess, like, a negative energy that you felt?
It was weird. It was like I said, sometimes if I was outside, there was just places I knew you I just, wasn't supposed to go.
Yeah.
Or things, you know, and the basement, I wasn't completely terrified. Like, I was scared because I was a little kid and, like,
right.
what the fuck's going on?
Yeah.
But...
Basements always are scary, I feel like, when you're a kid. Yeah.
Right. But I don't think it was ever, like, I thought I was gonna... I don't know.
Right.
You know, it's been so long, but it was something that really stuck with me and really kind of kicked off. Like, my sisters are 10 and 13 years older than I am.
Uh-huh.
And so, you know, this was when I was super little, and so it was, you know... They were all into Ouija boards and all kinds of other shit. And so that whole kind of thought of, you know, there has to be ghosts. And then we moved, and I've got a picture somewhere of my grandmother and her dad, who's like, you can tell there's a picture of him. If anybody's ever experienced this, there's a clear picture of him that like everybody in the family has in this suit and tie type.
Right.
Of
thing. Oh, yeah.
And so she's sitting in the kitchen. And, you know, I think my grandfather just randomly took a snapshot of her. And there's this, like, thick white thing, like, you know, fog-looking thing next to her. And you can clearly, like, draw out the tie and, like, that whole distinguished, like, feature of him. So he's, like, hanging around her. And so I don't know if it's just one of those things where my family...
And he had already passed?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And so
oh.
it was just like...
Oh!
Yeah,
aww,
I think it's
also cute.
Yeah, it's always been one of those things where I think there's been something, or I get drawn to certain properties for certain reasons.
And yeah,
I think that has a lot to do with it.
Interesting.
I believe in ghosts. If you didn't realize,
so do I. I actually asked our realtor when we moved here.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, "Is there anything I need to know about this house?
Mm-hmm.
Are there any ghosts? Is it haunted?" And she kind of laughed at me, and I was like, "No, I'm serious."
Yeah,
like,
for real.
We had just watched. I don't know if you've ever seen on Netflix the. Haunting of Hill House or
oh, right,
Hilltop
right.
or something like that. And if you need a good scary show to watch, guys.
Oh, right.
That was an amazing show, but it scared the bejesus out of me. And I, like, was convinced we were moving into a haunted house. And luckily, no one has experienced anything.
Mm-hmm.
Stuff to you. Ooh, well, that's interesting.
Yeah, you don't want to get stuck in a mortgage with a fucking poltergeist or some
no.
shit.
No! Oh, God, that was one of the first scary movies I ever watched when I was younger. For some reason, I'm scared of clowns.
Mm.
And, like, I mean, I watched every single, even though not popular poltergeists
right.
that were more in the, like, later 80s I watched. But, yeah, no, you don't want to get stuck with, like, being on some, and there's so much history of Native American history and culture and stuff in this area that I was just like, please let this be a good, peaceful place. Like,
oh, yeah.
I hope nothing negative
right.
or terrible happened on this
mm-hmm.
property, but so far, knock on wood. So
mm-hmm.
far, so good.
Well, I mean, honestly, that's everywhere, like, especially in
yeah,
New
true.
Jersey. I think it's the Lenape tribe and different variations of that.
Mm.
And, you know, and just, like, politically trying to fight the city for certain rights and things. Because, yeah, I mean, pretty much all of this land was taken.
Yeah,
so,
yeah, for sure, for sure.
You know.
Absolutely.
Burial grounds and all kinds of shit.
Yeah, yeah. Ghost stories. Man, I feel like we could have a whole... Maybe we'll start season two just talking about ghost stories.
Yes.
Herbal ghosts.
Nice.
let's see. I don't know. I got some fun facts, I guess. I'm not sure if I've mentioned this, but the whole reason we even found this place was when Jeff and I were living in a van. But we weren't just living in a van. We lived in a van with our cat.
Mm.
And that was interesting. So we were looking for a place to live in the States, and we converted the van ourselves. It was a Ford E250, a little labor of love, and had no idea what the hell we were doing. But to this day, years later, not a single shelf has collapsed in that van.
Nice.
And we've been on some gnarly roads. But I guess, I don't know, I can't remember what I've said and what I haven't said on this podcast.
Mm-hmm.
But in case you don't know, lived in a van for a while, traveling around with our cat, and she did not love it.
Kudos to you. Like, I, Mike and I have a pretty small place, and luckily there's just opposite rooms that we can go in because we're both very independent, and so
mm-hmm.
to have just that space and know that's, like, where you sleep and eat, and it's, like, you know, a 4x10, like, whew.
Oh, yeah. I mean, especially because we were traveling around during the winter, so it's not like it's, like, mm-hmm. oh, I'm going to go and just, like, lay out in this area that's so nice right,
right
now and take my time. It was
yeah.
more just, like, oh, shit, it's ready because we're going to, like... If we had a little issue, like, I'm going to sit in the front seat and you're going to sit in the back of the van in silence. Yes, that part, that aspect was a little bit challenging. And honestly, I think the headspace, the knees started feeling it by the end of it. And I would love to have traveled during more summer months. Mm-hmm. Even though that proves its challenges as well when it's really hot in the van. But
oh, yeah.
But I like had all these visions of like showering outside and being so free all the time, and then I was just like in 12 bajillion layers,
right.
and like relatively freezing.
So if you had some advice for people, like what are some of the things you wish you would have known before trying the whole van life thing?
I would say that at least for me, if I was planning on living in the van, like Jeff and I, we were in there for 6 months, but we really didn't have any idea how long we were going to live in the van. And I think one of the things that kind of was getting to us, like I mentioned, was that headspace.
Mm.
And I don't know, like I said, if it was because the season, we had to spend more time in the van than we had originally anticipated. But I think taking that into consideration, like there's a difference between like getting a van for like weekend trips and just kind of like adventures in that way versus getting a van to kind of live in.
Mm-hmm.
And that would be a huge thing. Like, I know it's more money. I mean, we got really lucky. We only paid like $9,000 for our Ford E250.
Oh, nice.
It was in great condition. I mean, it had some miles on it, but great condition. And it was extended, so that size was great, but the headspace, I mean, that was a little brutal.
Yeah.
That was a little brutal. That'd be my biggest advice, I would say. And
I mean,
then,
that's a huge trend for people right now, is
yeah.
smaller living and
mm-hmm.
living in vans, and it's crazy.
Our knees were just really getting to us, and like our bed was up enough to where you could almost sit upright,
mm-hmm.
but you had this like tiny little crick in the neck,
yeah.
and that really started to like kind of get to you as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it was definitely amazing, had its challenges for sure. And ups and downs as all travel does, but this is a beautiful country. I mean, despite its problems,
mm-hmm.
this is a vast, stunning country, and we were in Canada as well, so we were lucky enough to see that.
Yeah, I think that's awesome.
All right, lay it on me, Paula.
Oh gosh, some of my stuff's kind of boring. Let me see. I've got all kinds of things. It was like this really fun, pick your path. Should I go down this like super gloomy, depressing line of my life, or should I try to pick some cool things out?
We can have a little bit of both.
Right.
I get depressing with you.
Well, I had this really cute little picture of me as a kid, and it's like this chubby little round face and, you know, all smiles, and I'm sitting on this raft that I built because, like, as a kid, I was
your
really
grandfather's
big.
Ghost is next.
And the thing comes up from the water. No, but like I was always really inquisitive and loved to build things and create things, and I was always convincing my friends on the weekends. And I'm talking about like second, third grade, like convincing my friends on the weekends to clean out their sheds so we could use it as like a clubhouse and
nice.
You know, like all kinds of stuff like that. And so I decided to rally up some kids one summer, and we built this quote unquote raft. So we got pallet wood and we got like water jugs, and I was like, okay, well, that'll kind of hold air maybe. And so like I tied them to the bottom and I had the wood on the top, and then I had this, you know, it was just crazy, and I spent so much time in it, and we finally got it out to the lake, and you know, that's where the picture is taken, my mm-hmm. little life vest around my neck, and I put it in the water from the dock, and I think I got like 3 feet, and then it sunk, and I was just like, yeah,
no.
Like a little piece of me died that day.
And I've never been the same since.
Right, I think I was like 10 years old.
Oh, God. Thank God you have a life vest on, though.
Right. But yeah, being able to do fun stuff like that, like working with your hands, I always enjoy still doing that today.
Yeah, and sometimes, you know, it doesn't work out. Jeff and I... for his 30th birthday, we were in Canada, and he loves making quincies or like snow forts.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And we spend, I mean, it's days or weeks, because you like kind of shovel it out and you pile up some snow, and then you like let more snow, like if it's a storm coming through, you let that pile on, and then you go through the center and you let more snow, and like, this thing was so elaborate. I think he was trying to like show me what could be. So we show you the world. So yeah, the cold world of the snow fort. This is the fun things they do in Canada.
Right.
So a girl from Miami, this was like, Jeff's mom was literally packing my whole body with like those little heaters, warmers. And she put them all over my legs, like in my shoes and my jacket. And she's like, okay, go.
Yeah.
But I mean, we had like shelves to hold candles. We had like rugs down. We had made this this freaking fire pit inside, and it looked amazing.
Right.
And then we turned the fire pit on, and immediately almost died of like smoke inhalation.
Yeah.
So then we had to turn it off and kind of just sit there at night in the cold. And I was just trying so hard to be a good sport.
Oh.
And if I didn't move, then I was like, okay.
Right.
I could last a little bit longer.
Mm-hmm.
And then we just had wine that I was just chugging because I was trying to get as warm as possible. And for as much work as we put in, it was kind of like a big fail. I mean, like, we could not last in there because it was so cold, and we couldn't turn on the fire because we would have died.
Right.
So it happens, you know? You put in a lot of work, you do something, and you're like, this is genius. This is going to be amazing. And we were grown-ass adults, too. And yeah, it didn't work out. But sometimes it's just the fun in making it.
Mm-hmm.
Or like trying to get creative. Like, what can we do with this?
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I want to try to make a raft in time. We've been watching a lot of Alone.
I've never
It's like
seen
a survival
that.
Show.
Oh,
they
okay.
basically drop someone by themselves with like 10 items, and they have to
oh,
stay
wow.
out for as long as they possibly can survive.
Right.
The first season, I think the guy was out for like 60 days or something.
Mm.
But yeah, you see them, it's like, oh, I found this jug. I'm going to paddle across the Great Lakes with it.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
So I guess I've had a couple international jobs, a few international jobs. Straight out of university, I became an English teacher in Korea.
Mm-hmm.
Which, fun fact, friends, you don't need to be an English major, just telling you.
Right.
All you need is your bachelor's, and there is no age requirement, well, you know, besides having a bachelor's, but I'm just saying, there are older people who taught, there are younger people who taught, middle-aged people who taught, so if this calls to you or inspires you in any way, I think you should listen to it and go, because all you need is your bachelor's in any capacity.
That's crazy.
Yes. I mean, I think that in some countries, and depending on, like, the level, you know, if you're trying to teach university classes
right.
or something like that, which I ended up doing somehow, I don't even know. But you probably need something a little bit more than your bachelor's, or maybe like a master's in English or something. But nope, we just had our bachelor's. I met Jeff in Taiwan, in Korea. That's where we met. So it was nice and serendipitous. Little side fun fact, Jeff's sister before him had moved to this small town in Korea. And his family joked, oh, she met her husband there. He's British.
Oh,
and same small town as us, and their family joked that Jeff would go and meet his wife there, and he's like, no, I'm just gonna like
you know,
live it up and travel.
Right.
literally a month and a half after he moved after he moved to Korea, he met me, and that's all I gotta say about that. But yeah, English teacher in Taiwan as well, and a farmer in Jamaica. Because I would say that that was legit. We were legit ass farming and just trying to figure it out, vegetables. Mm-hmm. We planted a Scotch bonnet pepper plant in our garden here in Oregon to kind of be our little ode and our homage to our time in Jamaica. And we actually lived where Bob Marley was born.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so difference between Kingston, which is where he talks about a lot, which is where he spends a lot of his life, but in 9 Mile is where he was born. It's actually where he's laid to rest right now. And we were able to live in 9 Mile. And maybe some of only a few foreigners, I'm sure, have ever lived in 9 Mile. It's in the middle of the mountains in Jamaica. Mm-hmm. It took us like 3 hours to go to the grocery store.
That's nuts.
And yeah, an extra side fun fact, Jeff got to sing and play Bob Marley songs at the Bob Marley mausoleum on his birthday.
Oh, that's cute.
Yeah, so that was really cool. It was an intense but amazing experience.
Nice.
There's a lot of talking about the weather.
Right.
Yeah, because that's pretty much where ran everything.
Yeah, I worked on a farm when I was pregnant with Molly. I was trying to find something. For those who don't know, I think I mentioned on the show before, I got pregnant in high school and was like desperate to find work and didn't realize that it was gonna be like hard to pretty much do anything. And that was kind of cool because it was mostly like I got to work with the petting zoo area, and so wallabies and
all the
kind of llamas, which I guess—
Where were
like,
you with wallabies? Were you in Australia?
Oh, like, no. Like, there's petting zoos all over that have, you know, like wallabies.
Oh, true.
Yeah. And so, those things kick like crazy. I had to like rustle them back into the bags, and then the llamas, I was so worried they would spit on me and shit. So I mean, looking back, like, now it seems like fun, but then I was like, I fucking hate this. And I was pregnant, and then like somebody was mentioning how I shouldn't be pregnant and like shoveling fucking animal shit or something, and I'm like, cool, you gonna pay my bills? Like, get the fuck off my ass.
You can really get it to know us on this episode. This is how we really talk, actually.
But my first job was actually when I was 12, and I did some landscaping to earn money for like the infamous 8th grade trip that everybody in the East Coast had. And we were going to Hershey, Pennsylvania, and going to Hershey Park, and got to stay in a hotel room. And
nice, you know,
yeah. And so I was raised by my grandparents, and so we didn't have a lot of money at that point. And it, you know, I was like, if you want to go, you've got to get the money yourself. And so I think that really instilled this whole work ethic in me, and I always enjoyed working outside. And so, yeah, I mean, I still do a lot of landscaping.
Yeah.
Like, I think I posted something about our property recently with a lot of the landscaping we do, and that's what we do mostly on the weekends. And
yeah, it's nice to see that the things that you did kind of as a child have come full circle.
Oh, yeah.
Nothing that I really did as a child has come full circle.
Oh, really?
I don't think so. I mean, I played basketball. I lived in a city. Definitely didn't farm. I mean, I exercised. That's about the only thing that's come full circle.
Right.
Definitely didn't, like, live away from the water or... Yeah, I feel like I've evolved quite a bit from childhood rather than, like, staying...
Right.
...the same.
Well, it's definitely, you know, just skill sets. Like, bringing those forward and then applying them and stuff. And
yeah.
Like, when I was a kid, we were mentioning before the podcast, like, I played a ton of chess as a kid. And that was, like, my biggest thing is I just wanted to play chess all the time. I really like the strategic aspect to it. And that's something like I haven't done since I was a teenager.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that just thought process of things and looking at things in that way really helped me because I ended up getting my master's in business and going kind of that route for a really long time. But yeah.
Yeah, your entrepreneurial spirit.
Mm-hmm.
Which is now passed on to your daughter.
Yeah.
Trying to get the kids to work hard, make some money, yeah. Hustling on the playground.
I think that's great. Yeah, she finds little things or she'll make slime and like sell it at school. And then she'll tell her friends, like, if you can go get me some more sales, like, I'll give you a cut.
Yes.
Which is the funniest thing. And this was like in, I think, second or third grade she was doing this. So that was
pretty
great.
That's so funny.
Yeah.
All right, hit me.
Let's see. What do I have? You know, I think one of the interesting thing is that I didn't realize for the longest time that, like, my family is really structured as a matriarchy.
Oh, that's an interesting thing to know.
Yeah, like I didn't realize it until now, having a husband and kind of, you know, now taking care of my grandfather and seeing that dynamic where I'm still kind of head of household, and realizing that that was just, you know, what it was. Like, my grandfather really was in this kind of state of servitude towards the women in our family, which is a lot different than, especially in that time frame, would be, you know, completely different. You know, he would work, but then he would also cook and clean when he came home, and my grandmother was kind of useless after a while. Didn't do much of anything, just sat around drinking, you know, her cocktails and watching TV. But that's like the image of like the 1950s father.
Right, exactly. It's like, the opposite, yeah.
Yeah, just like drinking cocktails and sitting and watching his sports, yeah, whatever the hell it is. So that was pretty interesting. And so I think that really shaped my relationships with people and kind of, I don't know, I guess my confidence in things, because especially as a young kid and a girl, there wasn't too much where, you know, like I would go out with my grandfather and work on things. And I think that's where I got that work ethic and that building kind of initiative to go build things a lot of the time. But it wasn't this like, oh, you know, go play with the girls or go, you know, be with the women or
any
of that. There wasn't any of that, which was really, really cool.
Yeah, that is really cool. I mean, I love that. Jeff's family is very matriarchal, I would say, as well. I think mine is kind of patriarchal, but still strong women in the family. I mean, a lot of strong Hispanic women in my family. And on the American side as well, I mean, my grandmother, I guess, was a little bit opposite in the sense that she, like, wanted so badly to work. And she did. Like, she was like, this is what I'm going to do. Like, she opened up a clinic for people. She did all of this stuff. And, you know, my dad's talked about it. Like, at the time, it was really strange. And I think he felt initially that it, like, took away from the family a little bit because he wanted her to be there, because I think that's what they expected.
Right, right.
But when he got older, at least I think, I can't speak for him, but at least in my regard, like, that's such a powerful thing to see in my grandmother, the fact that she didn't, like, do that. And that's also powerful for you to see that your grandfather, like, was willing to step up in a different role as well and kind of, like, take that on and not be worried about, like, societal standards and all that shit.
Right. Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah, that's really cool.
Yeah, I think that's the thing. Like, you know, Mike and I met. I got a business right out of college with a mentor of mine and had a fantastic time traveling around. Working
fantastic, take a shot.
Right.
If you listened to past episodes or read anything, you would know what I was talking about.
I know, right? I say fantastic way too much. And that was really great, and I have some actually really interesting stories from there, like this art theft that happened in Manhattan. But yeah, he passed away, and I didn't really know what to do at that point. He and I were really good partners, and so I ended up just taking some random job, decided I was going to stay at home more with my daughter, and ended up meeting Mike. And the first time we hung out, he made me food, and it was just like totally reminded me. It's like, okay, so you're like cute and caring,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
And he didn't have a chance after that. I was like, all right, this is happening.
You're not.
I made that decision.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's kind of neat. You know, we've been together for 7 years now, so that's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's nice to find a partner who's just willing to just kind of meet you and, like, kind of be equal. I feel fortunate in regards to Jeff as well. I mean, meeting in Korea, like, there would be months where, like, I would be low on money and he'd help me out, or he'd be low on money, and just because we were doing stuff or whatever, and we were young. I mean, I was freshly, like, I was 22 when I moved to Korea. And it always, like, felt like we automatically were kind of
together,
equal, and in the way that we took care of each other, not one over the other, not I cook and you like do this, or I am the only one person who cleans. And I always felt really grateful for that, and I'm always appreciative in seeing it in other people and in, like, I guess men and women who are willing to kind of just, like, be like, this doesn't have to be one way or another. We just, if we're a partner, we just take care of each other.
Yeah, I think it's so crazy talking with people about how many are so worried about, because of the feminist movement, now women aren't women anymore, and blah, 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 and oh my god, the world is going to end. And it's like, I don't know, from where I'm standing in our generation and a lot of the people that I've talked to, it's an actual partnership.
Mm-hmm.
It's
mm-hmm.
not this, you know, binding contract for survival for women,
right,
where they have to be married because they can't get a job or they can't do any of these
other things.
They're
going to be shamed or like...
And it's not this binding contract for men who need to have a family to get a promotion,
right,
or do all these other things.
Look a certain part.
Yeah, yeah, and to not have to play these roles if you don't want to play them. Like,
mm-hmm.
if you want to be, you know, a 1950s housewife in 2021, 2022.
That makes you happy, go be it.
But it's your choice at this point.
Yeah.
You know what I
mm-hmm.
mean? It's
right.
It's not something. And Spend I think, it. Yeah, I think that's always because when there's these super set strict roles, I think there builds up a lot of resentment. And I know a lot of like women who are older from doing caregiving when I was in college for so long, and there's a lot of, I don't know, just bitterness and resentment
mm.
for having to maybe be stuck in this role or to
just
give
up your whole life.
Yeah, give up your life for something and maybe not really get what you wanted out of it, and feel so nice to have an actual partnership and know
mm-hmm.
that, like, you know, you've got your teammate and they're
yeah.
actually working towards the goal.
Hell yeah.
You know, it's totally different. And so that's why it's so crazy to me for people to be like, oh, women aren't women. It's like, what the hell are you talking about?
Yeah. Pretty sure we still are.
Yeah.
Just, you know, are doing the things we were always capable of.
Exactly, right.
So I feel like yours are like so deep and
are
mine
they?
Are just like, meh, meh, meh. I've like done some things. So going back to the things that I've done, I guess, because this is what we're talking about, it feels weird to be like, I did this and this and this. But something that was cool that Jeff and I did in Taiwan was we summited the fourth largest mountain on any island in the world.
Nice.
So it's called Jade Mountain and it's 12,966 feet.
That's awesome.
So when I tried to do Shasta recently, I only got to 11.6, which still felt really tall, but I guess I could go higher. And then, yeah, that was an incredible experience. And I did that post-accident, so really any really hard physical thing I do post-accident always feels a little extra.
Totally.
And then, yeah, just we also circumnavigated Taiwan almost entirely on our motorbikes.
Nice.
And just had, like, little camel packs on either side of our motorbikes and our backpacking pack, like in the, or I think we had one on our back, one in the middle of our legs, and then Jeff like tied rope together between two backpacks that we had, and we kind of threw them over as like saddlebags.
Right, right.
And we camped all over Taiwan, and the weather got a little bit bad at the end, so we ended up renting a car for like the last week or so. But yeah, mostly circumnavigated on our motorbike, which was pretty freaking sweet.
Yeah.
For those who don't know much about Taiwan, go. It's an exceptional country.
Nice.
I feel like it's a hidden gem that you don't really hear too much about
mm-hmm.
or like expect to have this exceptional beauty.
Mm-hmm.
But it is one of the most stunning countries. There's like a trillion waterfalls. It's a tropical
right.
island, actually. You go snorkeling and there are ginormous sea turtles all over the place. And
wow.
And just, you'll like drive on the highway and you just have this epic ocean on one side and this epic mountainscape on the other side. And it's just, it's fantastic. Take a shot.
Right.
God, if only, I mean, I know that you're not a big drinker and I definitely drink more than you, but it would have been really fun
right.
if this whole podcast, we were taking shots whenever you said fantastic and then we could see how the episode evolves.
Oh my gosh, yeah. Yeah, I actually had dental work done this morning before our workout, too, so...
Oh, that would have made it even more fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A little numbness on one side, and then alcohol with that, and that would have been great.
Yeah, I would have been driving Paula home. No, just kidding. I would have been taking shots, too. Jeff would have been driving Paula home, and we would have just been having a great time in the car. But yeah, go to Taiwan. Climb mountains. Circumnavigate islands. Do those things. It's a great time.
Yeah, I think that's definitely something I missed out on because, you know, just getting pregnant in high school and just, you know, there wasn't a lot of travel growing up because I grew up a lot poorer than most people. And so Mike is the polar opposite in the way that he grew up. He's got a very wealthy family. He traveled a lot in Europe and went to school for a little bit in Europe. And I think I'm definitely going to be one of those older people that does things like that, and I maybe look a little more destitute or something, because I'm, like, you know, living in a van or on a boat or whatever, but I think that's such a good experience to have regardless, and yeah, I can't wait to do some stuff like that.
Oh, yeah. We've seen people of all ages, varieties, walks of life, and points in their life who traveled. I mean, I didn't travel like this when I was younger either. Like, we would take trips to Florida, like, within Florida, mm-hmm. for the most part. But this type of stuff, I mean, I just, when I was graduating high school, I was going to lose my mind if I didn't do something.
Right.
Or not high school, university. If I was going to have to go back to Miami, I was going to lose my mind. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of where it started. And I got a job too. And I think that was a difference too, is that right. Like, I got a job so that I could do, like, I found a way, because my parents, when I told them I was not coming home, they were like, you have no money to your name. I'm like, what the hell do you expect to happen? And so, yeah, just where there's a will, there's a way. And, you know, maybe it'll even be cool for you, because since you had Molly a little bit younger, when she's older, mm-hmm. you're still going to be relatively young. And I think it'll be a really cool, you know, you guys have such a beautiful relationship, at least as far as what I can see, mm-hmm. when we do have our little training sessions together, when it's the three of us. And I think it'll be really cool to, like, be able to do that with her when you're not, like, 70 years old and mm-hmm. she's, like, 30 or something like that, you know. Right. But when you guys can enjoy each other, almost when growing from, like, mother-daughter to, like, friends as well, when you're older in a way.
Yeah, it's crazy to think about it. I'm going to be, 38, going on 39 when she graduates high school. And I'm going to be 40 yet. So, I got quite a few things done when I was younger. I think that's just who I am. I'm just kind of, like, absorbing and going and moving and always having to be doing something. So I think it worked out really well.
Yeah. Kicking ass.
Yeah.
Kicking ass. Yeah, well, that's dope.
So, I don't know. I guess in the same vein of kind of spooky things, you know, I've been a pagan since I was, 12? And I've been practicing and studying for a very long time, and that's something that's still pretty just personal to me, mm-hmm. which, you know, people don't understand the religion, or I guess not religion, but the spiritual path a lot of the time. And so, like, my daughter goes to a private Catholic school.
Oh,
and,
yeah, I love
there's a funny story where she's got this religion teacher who picks on her constantly because they don't have uniforms, and so she gets to wear whatever she wants to school. And so I just, you know, she's not going to express herself when she's a kid. She's going to end up doing it as an adult. So instead of having, you know, a 30-year-old with a pink hair and her, living in my basement, I might as well just let her do her thing now. And so her teacher's always picking on her. And so one day, she decided to tell her Catholic, very devout Catholic teacher, that her mother was pagan and that she was teaching, you know, I was teaching my daughter this stuff, and so she really didn't want to have to learn prayers and whatever, and it scared the shit. Like, my daughter came home and she told me this story, and she basically, like, all the blood drained from this lady's face, and she's like, oh, okay, and just kind of, like, walked out of the
sinner
room.
In our
right, you got a devil worshiper, and my daughter thought it was hilarious, and she's like, I think she thinks, like, you're gonna, like, I don't know, like, curse her or something, mom, or put something on her. So I think she thought it was hilarious.
You should tell the rain story.
Oh yeah, and so, you know, my daughter's starting to get more and more into this. Like, my husband grew up in kind of a neutral household, and he went to private schools, and so they were very religious, but he's not a religious person. He's not someone who is pagan in any regard, but he, you know, appreciates what I do. And so recently, more so now that my daughter's older, I've shared a little bit more of what I do, and she notices some of the things I do in my practice. And so one morning she was sitting on her bed and she's telling me the story, and she's, like, rocking back and forth, and she's like, I saw this online, you know, because TikTok, I guess they have witch talk or some shit. And she's like, and I just had it, like, rain, and she's, like, rocking back and forth and on her bed, and she's like, and I was summoning the rain, because it was just out of nowhere. We had that weird-ass rainstorm.
That, like, week of, like, rain.
And she was, like, talking about how she was the one that summoned the rain, and I thought it was the cutest thing, you know, but there's still some magic, and I think that's a really nice way to kind of keep yourself connected to your childlike wonder.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, she was super excited about that. And she's like, I'm so badass.
I love that. So it's like, I brought this.
Yeah.
I brought this rain. I mean, it just makes me think of, like, oh yeah, we've talked about this so much, like, being younger and doing seances or like light as a feather, stiff as a board, light as a feather, stiff as a board, and watching the craft and being like, oh, one of my friends had her mother's Ouija board, or this is what they told us at least. And apparently the mother had bought it in Salem, Massachusetts when she was younger, and it had curved, it was a curved board rather than like
the square
board that you get from like Toys R Us.
Right.
And I mean, I honestly don't know how to explain what happened to this day. Like, we would blindfold each other, put a pillow over each other's face, then spin the board around so that no one knew what direction it was in. It was in, and man, we were in communication.
Mm-hmm.
And I just, oh man, just got like so energized by that shit.
Right.
And then it started to scare me. When I was little, I was like, I believe in this too much and things are happening, I'm gonna go.
Yeah, I think that's, like, we're taking a trip as a family to Boston next week, and I'm excited to take Molly to Salem and, you know, see the memorial of, you know, the names of some of the women from the trials there and some of that whole experience. But, yeah, it's kind of interesting and neat, because for those who, like, don't believe, I think it's because they're too worried about what would happen if they did believe. Like, my husband's a lot like that. He will not watch. For the longest time, he didn't want to watch ghost stories or, you know, those real encounters, and they have somebody come to the house and, you know, banish a ghost or anything. Like, I'm not watching that shit. I just don't like it. And it's like, okay. Like,
it scares you.
Right. But, you know, that whole kind of growing up and being in a Catholic school, some of that stuff is instilled in you where it's like, you don't want to summon any of that.
Yeah.
I think that's why it was important for us to buy some property that didn't have a house on it, build our own house, because I've always felt like, in tune with whatever the hell was already in a house, and I just didn't want to have to deal with that anymore.
Yeah, you're like, I had enough childhood. I need some sleep. I can't be waking up in the basement anymore.
Yeah, for sure.
And the last one, I guess, is that, I don't know if I mentioned this, but I know that I mentioned the accident a little bit. Many of you are aware that that accident left me paralyzed, or maybe you're not aware, from the knee down. It severed my sciatic nerve, a boat propeller, in case I never actually talked about this. I'm not sure. We did a little bit when we had one of our earliest guests on who had gotten into a similar accident, who I met. Yeah, Barbara. But I'm not sure if it was ever mentioned that I actually became the first person in the entire world to receive a new experimental nerve surgery.
Nice.
Which is always kind of mind-blowing. I mean, like, you have surgeries all the time and stuff like that, and I think about my nerve surgery and I think about my accident, but I don't always think about what it actually means to be, like, the very first person in the entirety of the entire world to receive it.
Right.
And that's always a little bit mind-blowing.
Yeah, for sure.
Me. Yeah. So any medical people out there, basically they used, my neurosurgeon happened to be on call the night of my accident, took it upon himself for the, like, 30 years, about 30 years or so, they had been researching this. So almost my entire life, they had been researching for this particular surgery. And then I got into my accident, and then just in case I said yes to this surgery, he took part of my sciatic nerve to harvest it in a petri dish. And about a week after the accident, he walked into my room and he asked if I would do it. And I mean, I was like kind of all over the place in my head. But of course I said yes, because I didn't think it would do anything for me, because you're the first person. I mean, like, how successful is it going to be?
Right.
But I figured it could do something for future science.
Mm-hmm.
And so this whole thing happened because the Schwann cells only had so long to live in the petri dish before they started getting bacteria, but the government had shut down.
Oh,
we were waiting for FDA approval, and, like, literally it was down to the wire, and we think that the shutdown actually helped because it was less people to, like, they funneled through, like, really time-sensitive stuff that they had to approve instead of it going through, like, all, which I don't know, for better or for worse. Like, it got approved at, like, the last second. And then I went into surgery, and while I was in surgery, and this is like a bajillion hour surgery because they were doing other reconstructive stuff for my leg, but the doctor came out and he's like, so there's a little bacteria in, like, some of the petri dishes. Should we still do this? There's a chance it could kill your daughter. And
jeez.
Like, they did this while I was out. My sister said no. My parents said yes. Mm-hmm. Jeff said yes. I think my sister was just really scared. Right. My mom immediately threw up after she said yes. And then here I am today, but...
Right.
In case any of you guys are curious, just... So they took the Schwann cells, but since the sciatic nerve is the largest nerve in the body,
right.
just doing that wouldn't have been enough. They were trying to create a nerve graft.
Right.
So they cut through my right leg as well. They took solar nerves, a different type of nerve,
right.
from both of my ankles, and then they grafted it with the Schwann cell, and then they made this big old graft. And then about 2 years later, I got my first little baby movement because the nerves, in case you don't know, grow a millimeter a day.
Mm.
Had to go all the way down my leg. And I can't really, not too much has come out of it. I can plantar flex a little bit and I can externally rotate just a little bit. I can't move my toes. It didn't get that far or anything. But I would say it was still pretty successful
yeah.
considering they got some movement out of something that should have never moved. I didn't start growing any tumors, which was another huge concern because you're generating cell growth,
right.
essentially.
Right.
And I didn't die of bacterial infection.
Yeah.
So first person in the world, look it up, Schwann cells.
Damn.
They're the wave of the future.
Yeah, I mean, so that was like Miami, right? So I mean,
yeah.
it would have been totally different had the accident happened in like a small town where you didn't have... like big doctors.
I mean, I straight up would have died.
Yeah, I mean, like the fact that, you know, you were there, at least happened there.
Yeah.
And you were able to get somebody who had such an advanced knowledge, or that there was this research being done so that you could take part in that, was pretty awesome.
Yeah, I mean, with the accident, it was a lot of really chance occurrences. I mean, it's funny because Jeff and I traveling through Taiwan, they have a lot of boats where the propellers are like tails. So they like go off the boat. They're really long off the boat. And we're like, that shit's real dangerous. Someone's going to get really hurt there. If it would have happened there, dead, 100%.
For sure.
I mean, even in Miami, like everything happened by the second. Like
mm-hmm.
I had, the doctor said, like, I think I may have mentioned this, but 60 more seconds and there would have been nothing they could have done
right.
to like resuscitate me. So... I mean, I am really fortunate. I'm fortunate that they had some experience with, like, obviously, other boating incidences and big wounds and stuff like that. But,
mm-hmm.
I mean, I guess, like, since my accident, the way they treated me has almost become, like a protocol. So
right.
they've, like, taught what they did with me to
right.
other people, which is, I don't know why, but it's really interesting.
Oh, for sure.
And, yeah, I did. I got really lucky. I got really lucky that... It happened where my dad was a police officer, so the cops heard the 911 call over the radio, heard my name, and they escorted the ambulance
oh,
to the
right.
hospital, and we think that that was pretty much maybe, like, one of the things that would have made it a
right.
really big difference if we would have gotten stuck in traffic in any capacity. So little things that all had to add up, and having that doctor there and the doctors I did. And, yeah, the Miami Project Cure Paralysis is one of, like, the leading...
Mm-hmm.
I think paralysis research centers in, I know the country, I'm not sure about the world.
Right.
And then our hospital too is a teaching hospital. So they usually are really, they usually teach the army
mm-hmm.
what to do with like shrapnel wounds
right.
and with huge, yeah, wounds,
right.
which was great for me. And fun fact about Jackson Memorial Hospital in Miami is that they're actually the call for the White House.
Nice.
Yeah, so I think they go there. I mean, I'm sure they go to places in Washington too, but
right.
they have like a direct line to Jackson Memorial,
yeah.
which
See,
is interesting.
That,
yeah.
that kind of shit's spooky to me because you have to think of all these little intricate pieces that had to fall into place to make
so
that
many.
Happen. Yeah, and it's just so nuts. Like you said, if it would have been literally anywhere else, none of those things would have fallen into place.
Oh, yeah. And I mean, like... The people I happened to be around, like, they were off-duty at the time, but I had two paramedics that were around us,
mm-hmm.
off-duty, but still paramedics, who were able to at least try to make, like, tourniquets and have some composure in what they were supposed to
right.
do. Like, they knew that we couldn't call for air ambulance or
right.
helicopter to come, because I wouldn't have made it in time, and then, like, someone who was in the ocean over here who was coming towards us in a boat to say hi to friends was like the first person who saw me with like the blood. But if they weren't coming, then like maybe I would have just drowned. Like I have no idea. So
yeah.
all these little tiny little things had to add up. But grateful for it and just, you know, shit happens and just keep going.
Yeah, for sure.
But I hope, you know, this is kind of a... More just like listening to Paula and I and fun little conversation after 40 episodes. We kind of just wanted you to just feel a little bit connected to us in a more personal way, just mm-hmm. not the professional way that we try to bring with our knowledge and with our respective fields, but just kind of who we are as individuals. And these little things that shaped us to be able to bring this
right.
to you. I mean, Paula talking about her landscaping and growing up and kind of falling into the pagan path and what that did for you in regards to working with herbs. And,
right.
and I feel like that's like a direct
oh, totally.
Connection to who you are right now.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you're about to meet one of your aunts.
Yeah.
Who's also supposed to be very witchy, eh?
Yeah, so I've never met her before. We'll tell this little story before. So that's why we're going to Boston. Like I said, I was raised by my grandparents. My dad was schizophrenic after he got out of the army. And they realized, you know, he had to be put into Greystone, which was at the time in the 80s and 90s, they had insane asylums or, you know, what else do they call them? Psychiatric hospitals.
Yeah.
And then, you know, before Reagan let everybody go in the 90s, he was held up in one of those. And so I never got to know my dad. I never got to know my dad's side of the family. And because of that, I never really knew this aunt existed. And then I had this weird feeling after my mom passed that I really wanted to just get to know my dad a little bit before, you know, maybe he died or whatever. And unfortunately, it was like a year after he died that I finally found my cousin on my dad's side of the family. And so my dad had passed, and I was young, you know, I'm in my 20s. And so it was like my dad had passed, my uncle had passed, my other uncle that I wouldn't have known had passed, but my aunt was the only one that was still alive. And so she looks a lot like me. She's super like witchy and, you know, all of these things and really into that kind of thing. So we're almost like these kindred spirits. And mm-hmm. so, you know, like 30 something years later, we're gonna meet for the first time.
Yay!
So it'll be cool.
So exciting. So exciting. Well, I hope you had a little bit of fun with this episode, Paula. I hope you have the greatest trip. I know I'm not going to see you after we wrap this up here before you leave.
Right.
I hope you have an epic trip. People, I hope you've enjoyed these 40 episodes.
Yes.
Thank you for coming along with us on this journey, and hopefully we'll see you for round 2.
All right.
Peace and love.